Welcome to They Think It's All Over, sponsored by Granny's Football Store. Yes, welcome back, listeners. It's episode 102 of They Think It's All Over, the football shirt show, sponsored by Granny's Football Store. I'm Adrian, Football Shirt Italia, and this week we have got a treat for you. Myself and Adam had the pleasure of chatting to an esteemed football journalist about one of the most iconic football shirt pictures of all time. Think Simple Minds, think Alive and Kicking, think Umbro, Ribeiro, think Tim Flowers, think Mark Wright. This is when myself and Adam spoke with Tom Gibbs about that Premier League launch photo. This week, myself and Adam are absolutely delighted to welcome our guest, Tom Gibbs, senior sports writer at The Telegraph. And we're going to chat all things football, but really, we want to talk mainly about this article you did last year around the launch of the Premier League and that very famous video and photo shoot that I think a lot of us have seen. But welcome to the pod, Tom.
What a pleasure to be here. Very, very, very happy to talk about football shirts, as many of my friends will testify. And I don't have many friends who are willing to talk about football shirts with me, so this is a true treat.
Excellent. You're in a safe space then. You're in a safe space with us.
But Adam, you're the only one that's come dressed for the part today.
I am. I'm actually wearing one of the shirts featured, I believe, in the photograph where you track down all the players. Is that correct? I believe
right.
This is the one that Mark Wright was wearing, because I'm wearing the Liverpool Centenary home shirt.
That's very true. Didn't they hold on to that one and did the sponsor change? Or was it that with Crown Paints on for the previous season, for the final Division One season?
You are almost correct. It was Candy, but yes, it's almost the same shirt. There are some differences, because if we're going to get really nerdy, the Candy version was sublimated with the Adidas stripes, whereas on this one, they're sewn on.
Oh.
So that there are, and this also has a new badge, because it's the Centenary badge, whereas the Candy one had just the standard Live a Bird in the shield. But yeah,
I've already embarrassed myself here, haven't I? I'm this is what happens when you can't sort of train against people who are at your level. You end up letting yourself down.
To be fair, I'm sure you'll know a lot more about the team that you support, which we believe is QPR.
Yes, that's right.
Proud
QPR fan, despite it all.
And you're going to definitely trump us when it comes to the topic today in terms of going back to 1992 and the launch of the Premier League, because there's some quirky kit stories as well in that photograph, I think. Maybe you will touch on some of those. But why don't you set the scene? We're going back to when football began, apparently.
Yeah, so I saw this picture at a very impressionable age. I would have been 8 years old the year the Premier League launched. And I loved kits. The first time I ever went to see QPR, I didn't have a kit when the game started. And by the end of it, we'd gone to the club shop. And I've got a very fond, tender memory of being 6 years old in the back of my dad's car on the way back from QPR. We'd won 6-1. And he bought me the previous season's away shirt, which was sponsored by Holland Fly KLM. I mean, now that I'm saying that out loud, I realise the sponsor was KLM, but the message on the shirt was Holland, fly KLM, in days when you could be a bit more verbose. And I remember like stroking the felt on that shirt on the way home and feeling a tremendous sense of love and joy. And I mean, it really helped that QPR had won 6-1, and I've never seen a score six goals since. So you know, kits have always been a big part of my enjoyment of football. And this image, which was provided to launch the Premier League, is all, for those who haven't seen it, all 22, as it was then, clubs, they all sent a representative to London to pose in what would be their kits for the following season in the Premier League, in a squad photo, but it was a mishmash of all the home kits. So you've got some very easily identifiable kits, which have gone on to become quite well known. I think the one that really sticks out for me is the Norwich, the Ribeiro Norwich, which, you know, we can get onto, if you like, what I actually think about the quality of some of these designs. But
okay,
that is associated with them finishing third and then the Jeremy Goss heroics the following season in Munich, and lots of drawstrings, Man United, Villa, and Ipswich have all got drawstrings on the front of their shirts, which I remember at the time was properly controversial. There were like real worries that they were going to be used against players, and they'd like be, you know, they'd be grabbed, and players would have their necks hurt and things like that. But it's still such a striking picture, even if you don't like kits. It's just English football on the cusp of something enormous, and none of the people there could really see what it would become. But you can sort of see it when you look back on it, and just you see a game getting its act together and the marketing machine rolling into life, and it started things off in the right way. And of course, even more striking was the TV advert with the Simple Minds alive and kicking background, which still, despite it all, despite being quite cynical, little shiver down the spine when I hear that song.
It's one of those tunes, isn't it? I think most football fans just, like you say, the nostalgia of it, and it gets the mind racing back, and you think of those kits, and you think of a time when you were a kid and you were innocent, and everything was brilliant, and football was brilliant. But you talk about the marketing machine and the wheel starting to turn with the kickoff of the Premier League in '92, but it was a bit mismatch in terms of how some of the clubs treated the launch, and you talk about some of the players actually turned up to the day and how they turned up as well. There's some interesting stories there, isn't there?
I mean, you can read this article on Telegraph, .co.uk. I'm probably you're better off just Googling Premier League launch photo and my name if you want to find it. But I believe it was Vinnie Jones who the premise of the article was I tried to track down everyone who'd been in that photograph, and there were 22 players. And spoiler alert, I think I got to 19 of the 22 for various reasons. But Vinnie Jones told me he hadn't been to bed. He'd gone straight there, like on a bender. Back in his drinking days, as he puts it, he doesn't drink anymore. And it was definitely seen as a little bit of a lark, I think. It was June, I think. So players were right in the middle of what would have then been a slightly more generous pre-season, perhaps not in time, but certainly in the sorts of things they got up to and the condition they allowed themselves to get into during the off-season. And there were some who I spoke to who remained very proud of the fact they'd been in that photo. And others who it was treated as almost a punishment that they'd been sent down to London for the day because they'd done something wrong.
That was the case with Lee Sharp, wasn't it? Was that a telling off? Alex Ferguson sent him down as a punishment.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think probably one of many tellings off Alex Ferguson gave to Lee Sharp. But I mean, yeah, that's one of the other interesting things is looking at that photo and looking at the span of players that are in it, and Lee Sharp, fabulous career by any conventional measure, but perhaps didn't quite go on to what he could have been. He I don't know who you'd compare him to now. Like I think when he started off and broke through at Man United, maybe it was a bit of a kind of almost a Phil Foden vibe of that he really could go on to great things, and it didn't quite happen for him. And then you had John Walke in the same photo, who I believe played in the 1978 Cup final. So, were you to make that photograph today, that football just feels a little bit more English football, certainly at the top level. A little bit more brutal about moving on those sorts of players, with the exception of, James Milner and the like. But I'm not sure Brighton will be sending James Milner as the kind of marketable face of their happy new future now. And I suppose that also speaks volumes. Like some clubs sent quite high profile players. If you look at that photo and you're not massively well versed in it already, and you don't necessarily know your Arsenal squad of 92, 93, you might struggle to name the Arsenal player they've sent.
And I am going to struggle to name the Arsenal player. I'm looking at the photo right now and I'm like, I can see Strachan, I can see Beardsley, Tim Sherwood, but nope, I
It's
don't know the Arsenal player.
David Hillier, who was one of the three who was not interested in speaking to me. So I'll never forgive him.
He spoke to somebody, because I don't know if this quote is true, but it's attributed to him, so we'll go with it. And he said, for us, it was a case to turn up, have a laugh, and get paid. It was £1,000, in case you were wondering.
Yes, I believe that a rival newspaper did basically the same piece, and I think David Hillier did speak to them. So that's part of the reason why I'm still holding a grudge against David Hillier, who I'm sure is a lovely man, and actually did very politely turn me down. And now and again, doing this job, you do get told in quite an impolite way that people don't want to talk to you, which is entirely within their rights, but not always very pleasant to be on the other end of. But yeah, that sounds about right. A lot of people echoed their sentiments, although there was some debate about the fee, which made me wonder if people had been on a bit of a sliding scale, and perhaps some players had made out a bit better than others for their day's work.
We've held grudges for far less than that, so don't worry about holding a grudge for that reason. We definitely done worse than we had them.
No comment.
So QPR, who did QPR send then?
We sent Andy Sinton, who would have been perhaps our third best player of the time. I'm trying to rank that squad in my mind. you would absolutely have had Les Ferdinand as QPR's most exciting player. But he still hadn't really made his big breakthrough. I'd say 92, 93 was the year when he really became the player he would become. 2 years earlier, when I started going, he was a sub Ferdinand and he wasn't massively loved. It took him a while to come through at QPR. So Sinton was a pretty solid choice for us and a really excellent player for us as well. He tends to get lumped in with that Euro 92 cohort as these slightly embarrassing caps that England gave out at the time. But I suppose like fans of most clubs who have those players who get a few England caps, you're incredibly proud of them and rate them very, very highly. Whereas perhaps Spurs fans might have a slightly different memory of Andy Sinton, but he's still with the club, Sinton. He's sort of QPR's ambassador in chief, really, and does co-commentary for all the feeds and has done a really amazing job at QPR of bringing in more recognition to former players and trying to foster that bond a little bit more with players not being looked after as well as they perhaps could have been after leaving QPR in the past. So a proper QPR legend.
It may seem better, and but there's a quirk, isn't there, on a QPR kit in the photograph? And I don't know if there's probably some others like this as well. But you said it was June that they did the shot, and not all the kits were ready. So I think QPR had like a it, well, it's the right sponsor, isn't it? But not the right font. They'd sort of like just printed on a. Is it Classic FM back in this picture or?
I'm so pleased you brought this up, Adrian. I truly feel I'm amongst friends here. Yes. So in the language of journalism, on the familiar 92-93 QPR shirts, Classic FM is over two decks. You have Classic in black and FM underneath it in red. On Andy Sinton's shirt, it is all in black, all across one hoop in one line. And I obviously, excitedly, when I met Andy Sinton to talk about this, was like, "Have you got that shirt?" And he looked very, very blank and slightly disappointed in me for asking him about it. But I was so thrilled about this minor quirk on the QPR shirt. But yeah, there are quite a few oddities in that photo. Like there are how many? Seven sponsorless teams in that photograph, and Wimbledon would end up without a sponsor for the whole season. But I suppose things were a little bit more haphazard in those days, although you still see that a lot in the Premier League, don't you? I think Sheffield United launched their kits without sponsors initially this year. So, some teams just don't have it together and certainly didn't in time for June. But yeah, you'd love to get the original, like Gordon Strachan, unsponsored Leeds 92, 93, wouldn't you?
I mean, that'd be iconic. That was Admiral. Did that end up Top Man or something as a sponsor on that shirt, or was
I
it?
think Top Man's the year before.
Okay.
No, wait, they won the league in Admiral, didn't they? So I think it was Top Man. I think you're right.
Like you say, Nottingham Forest sponsorless, Norwich sponsorless. It's quite a few in there when you start to look at it and you get your eye in, you sort of think, I know the kit, but there's something a bit different about it. But it's just the colours and everything, absolutely unbelievable. How many of these shirts do you have? Or are you just loyal to QPR?
I am not very interested in other English teams' shirts, at least not owning them. That always just feels like slightly beyond the pale to me. I nominally have like a team I support in Italy, but I don't really have any problem with wearing other Italian club shirts. But like I own a Bromley FC shirt because they're the closest team to me, and that they I would describe them as my second team, if that's not a slightly naff way to think about football. But yeah, I do feel a bit funny about putting on another English team shirt. But yeah, I think I had the Classic FM, but it would have been a boys, probably a boys medium at the time, so not much use to me now.
Yeah, if only we had some of those kits. We had these kids in adult sizes now. If only.
What do you like? What stands out for you as the connoisseurs? Which of the, I mean, perhaps Liverpool aside, as for partisan reasons, but which of those do you feel look the nicest now, which have stood the test of time?
So to be honest, I really like the drawstring. You mentioned some of the teams. I think Sheffield United also had a drawstring as well, out the ones that you mentioned before. But I think out of all of them, I would say that I can't say it. No, I can't say it. I live in Norwich. I can't say the team that the shirt that I like the best because I can't do it because they're their rivals. But the team that I'm not going to mention, who are rivals of Norwich, I think that's a really cool shirt. I really like.
Who might have been sponsored by a lawnmower company?
Quite possibly. Yes, quite possibly. I do quite like the Norwich one as well. It's affectionately known in these parts either as the Egg and Cress shirt or the Bird Poo kit, depending on whether you like it or not. And I
Oh,
really
do
do like
what?
the.
Because one of them is a complimentary term.
Well, I guess egg and
Which
cress is
one's
possibly nicer than the bird poo kit, but I don't know. I don't know. But other than that, I quite like the forest shirt as well. I think that's quite stylish as well. It's you can't beat a good pinstripe. So, yeah, they'd probably be my picks.
I mean, you could probably make a case for pretty much all of the shirts there. I think Blackburn, because of what they went on to do, and I think they wore that shirt across the season when they won the league as well, did they? Or certainly wasn't too different. It was Essex and half and obviously half and half, but I think McEwen. So that stands out. The Peugeot Coventry City shirts for me always stood out. Really don't know why. And that Man City shirt as well. Yeah, I think the brother sponsor on and the Man City umbro. I mean, there's just something about that shirt and the era away from some of the more obvious ones that I think's a great kit.
I think
Yeah,
what
same
really
it's the
stands
same
out.
template, isn't it, on the Coventry as it is the Norwich, but I don't think they have quite the same memories of it, perhaps because Coventry were not all that good.
It is actually, isn't it? Yeah. I suppose with the Coventry one, it's just shades of sky blue and white, whereas the Norwich having the white and the green in makes it slightly different. But yeah, because they were both sponsored by Ribeiro, weren't they?
Yes.
Until they went bust, and then Mitre took over and ended up sewing their name onto the Norwich shirt, which I don't know if everyone knew that. But yeah, at one point, Ribeiro went bust, and then Mitre literally just sewed on the Mitre logo over the same kit and just kept that design for some incredible reason. I think the thing that really strikes me, though, is that how, aside from Norwich and Coventry, all the shirts look individual, even if they're made by the same manufacturer, and it's kind of less homogenous than it is now with the similar kind of templates being made. Every single kit, like even the ones with the drawstrings, they all have different colours and things like that, and different kind of ways of approaching the same thing.
They look to me like they would all feel slightly different to one another as well. And I think if you went down a rack of every football shirt in the Premier League this season, the texture would be very indiscriminate. And I reckon there would be a large variation in quality and general tactile experience if you were looking at these shirts.
Yeah, with the exception of Castore, who this year did give you a different feel. But do you know what? The Coventry and the Norwich one, that's got me, because I'd never noticed templates being the same. And now I started looking at it. Man City, Everton, Chelsea could all be the same template, maybe even Oldham. Oh, you've sent me down a rabbit hole now in terms of wanting to get into the detail of this one. And I think there's a few people out there that have actually collected every single shirt that's in this photograph, and they made that the theme of their collection. I mean, it's not bad, not a bad way to go about collecting shirts.
No, absolutely. I think the Wimbledon one's nice as well. I think you don't really see those little like sleeve, almost that high, not quite on the shoulders, but the stripes that just go sort of top of the arm. I'd more of that sort of thing.
And the video, you touched on the video and the music, but there was, again, we talked about the Premier League coming in, it was all professional, but the video shoot wasn't entirely professional either, was it? Or there's certainly a lack of warm running water, I think, from recollection.
Yes, cold showers. All of the players you see in the showers are being very brave boys indeed. I think John Salako is gamely rubbing himself with a loofah or something like that and lathering himself under what were apparently they had a fire engine and they just piped in the hoses to power that. But yeah, one of my favourite stories was the weights machine. There's a nice shot of what do you call those machines? This is not great for audio, but if you're holding out your hands above your head and bring it in together, I guess it's like working
Chest
your head
press,
back.
is it?
Chest
Or like
press,
a
right? Okay,
maybe?
yeah. So there's four or five shots of players doing that, and as the bars come together, the players change behind them. It's very, very clever bit of videography. And the Oldham player, who I think is Andy Ritchie, forgive me if I've got that wrong. But he told me that the weights machines weren't on, like they weren't lifting anything. But he does a real grimace and he really sells it. And knowing that and watching the advert again is a lovely Easter egg.
Was indeed Andy Ritchie, over 100 goals and 250 appearances for Oldham. There you go. Somewhat of an
Yeah.
Oldham legend.
All because he didn't work out properly.
So, where did QPR come then in his maiden Premier League season?
Yeah. Glad you asked, Adrian. We came fifth. We were the top London club. Imagine. It's absolutely absurd, isn't it? We were amazing. It was like, what an incredible time to be starting off watching your football team. Like, I remember standing in the queue for school dinners when I was like, yeah, well, at that age, 8 or 9. And it would have been like a Tuesday, and being so excited about the fact I was going to QPR on a Saturday. And there have been maybe, 10 seasons in the time I've been alive, in the 40 years I've been alive, which have felt like that now and again for QPR. But they would, everything came together beautifully. Gerry Francis did a brilliant job. The recruitment had been excellent for a long time. And we were playing delightful football. Ray Wilkins having a lovely late flourish to his career. Ferdinand devastating up front. It was really thrilling. And yeah, I would just it just gets more and more strange the further away you get from it to think that we were fifth in the Premier League, and coincided with really poor seasons for all the other London clubs, basically.
You must have been thinking when you first got into football, this is all right, isn't it? This is great. This is brilliant. This is what football is like. And then suddenly the stark realization of what actually being a QPR fan must have set in over the past few seasons. I think you, I'm just having a check, you were relegated in the 95-96 season. Is that right?
That is right. Yes. So it was only, what was that, 3 years later?
Yeah, so not long afterwards. So yeah, it wouldn't have taken you long to realize that actually maybe it wasn't all it was cracked up to be.
It's funny. I think I relate to football in quite like a sort of, even when I was young, I think I was like relatively zen about it. I don't ever remember being like really, really upset when we lost, because it, even when this was, of course, finishing fifth in the Premier League now is not what finishing fifth in the Premier League meant then. I don't know what our record was off the top of my head, but I'm sure we lost a bunch. I'm sure I'd always see. I've been going for a couple of seasons by then. You quickly realise that you're not gonna, it's not Man United basically, or Liverpool, or whoever else is doing brilliantly when you're a kid, and you are, unless you live in Shepherd's Bush, you're pretty unusual as a QPR fan wherever you are. And I'm from South London, so that is part of the identity, is that it's something different, and it's, very clearly, obviously different to most kids at school who are supporting bigger, more established teams. So I think you learn that quite quickly. And I was always just so in love with them and the team and the stadium and going with my dad, and that kind of trumped it all. And I was much more sort of fan of QPR than I was football in general. And I do feel like that is, I am and was so incredibly privileged to be able to go to the games. And it was a lot easier then than it is now to be able to do that. But I do think it fosters a way more healthy relationship with football if you're actually there and you can see it. And weirdly, I think it's much easier to become much angrier about football when you're at the remove of television. And I think TV is so brilliant now. Eking every bit of drama and horror out of football, but when you're at home watching it and completely powerless, it certainly gets to me a lot more when I'm watching QPR on TV than I am in person. If you're there and you're used to it and that's all you've known, like your main experience of football is seeing it in person, you instinctively understand both the absurdity of it at times when the veil falls from your eyes and you're like, hang on, this is just blokes running around, isn't it, after a ball, which now and again happens. And you also realise that a lot of it is quite boring and quite dull, and that's kind of a wonderful part of it. So, go to watch football would be my advice to young people if you possibly can, because it's it. I just think it's it, increasingly it just feels so different to the way people are consuming football now, and it is such a different experience to having TV is your main way into it.
I tell you what, you really were blessed as well, because Loftus Road is just one of those really terrific old school football grounds set in the midst of houses. I mean, it's literally set, you can't see it, it's set in houses. And as an away fan, I've only ever been as away fan, being behind the goal and you're just so steep and so close to the pitch. It's just absolutely brilliant. It's like sitting in, you know, when you watch clips of football from like the 1960s and 1970s, it's like you're sitting in one of those sort of films watching it, because it's such a surreal and brilliant viewpoint to sort of take in a game of football. So everybody should get down there. I just remember shouting abuse at Joe Lumley in goal, I think you had at the time, so it couldn't be that long ago.
And we were probably shouting abuse at him as well. That's interesting that you like it. I mean, I think overwhelmingly people visiting as away fans despise it, because the leg room's so terrible, and the view is awful, and the facilities are awful. But I certainly see the charms, but I've got a tiny bit more leg room in my seat than the away fans do.
See, I think that's all part of the charm of it, though. I think you're right. Like, it is quite sanitized, especially in this like TV world, the social media world as well. You talk about people getting angry and things like that, and kind of the stress of it all. And I think social media feeds into that as well. It's very easy to kind of tweet to be angry, like about whether your team are doing well or vice versa. But there's nothing quite like being there. Like living in, I've lived in Norwich since I came here for uni, and I've been to Carrow Road quite a few times, and it's, I would say maybe a similar kind of stadium to Loftus Road in that it's not like a very large stadium, although it's not within houses. And there is something about being in like a slightly older stand with like a pillar in front of you. Like the last game I went to, I was in like the corner pit with the snake pit, they call it. It's where the angriest of Norwich fans go. They're not very angry. We're in Norwich. But the view was terrible. Like I was next to a massive pillar, so one of the goals was completely obscured. And it was great. I had a great time. I think it was like a nil-nil game. It was completely boring and pointless. But there's just something about it, isn't there? That kind of, you talk about the shirts being tactile, but I think there is something tactile of being at a football game, especially in the nicest way, not at the more sanitized, bigger stadiums like the new stadiums. Like I'd love to go to the new Tottenham Hotspur stadium. It looks incredible, but it's a different experience to a Carrow Road or a Loftus Road.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, what I would say about that Tottenham Stadium is it is the only stadium I've been to that comes close to how good stadiums are in America. They have been to America and seen how to do it and nailed it. And it's the only football stadium I've been to where people are choosing to stick around afterwards and aren't in hospitality. Like the bars, the general area, the niceness of it, the thoughtfulness of the design, it is good there. It feels like anyone who's not looking at that very carefully and building a new stadium in the next 10 to 20 years is probably not going to have success.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't a criticism. What I really like about the Spurs stadium is that, yeah, it's not just the bowl shape. They do have that single tier stand, and you're right that they have put a lot of thought into it compared to maybe some other newer stadiums. But it is also a very different kind of experience, isn't it, to the kind of the Loftus Roads of this world, shall we
Yeah,
say?
I'm not going to argue with that point.
So bringing it back to Loftus Road and bringing it back to QPR then, what are some of your favourite QPR shirts from across the years?
I tend to like it when we have a red accent colour, which we do this season. We've done a throwback this year to 83, 84, and we won what was then Division Two. So it's 30 years since then. So we've basically done the Guinness kit again, albeit without Guinness as the sponsor. That for me needs to have red numbers on the back, which I believe we've done this year as well. We actually mess about with our kit very, very little compared to some other clubs. Like there was genuine outrage when there was one year where on part of the shirt the hoops didn't go all the way around. And this is really meaningful for a lot of QPR fans. And we really define ourselves in opposition to Reading, who often have broken hoops. And we're like, well, those are just vertical stripes. Horizontal stripes, sorry. Which is just the lamest diss imaginable. But there you go. When you compare QPR to a team like Palace, who are the big team I live closest to, they completely rip it up year after year, but they keep their identity somehow. And I think they've done some amazing things with their home kit, in particular Palace. But they've always done that. They had years in the mid-90s where they were like almost entirely red, and the year they got promoted when Andrew Johnson was amazing in what, 03, 04, that was more or less entirely blue, that shirt. And they've done sashes and zigzags. And I wouldn't mind a bit more of that from QPR at this point. We've had a lot of years now of very conservative kits. But then before that, we had in our last Premier League stint, we've had really, really poor. The first one was Lotto and then two Nike. Really thin hoops. Just the Nike one in particular for our second brief dalliance with the Premier League was atrocious. It was a templated job that just was not befitting a team of our proud kit history. But I mean the Guinness one is really hard to beat for sponsor and how it all hangs together and that red trim. And I will always have affection for the classic FM as well, but when you look at it closely, that the luminous yellow piping is slightly off-putting. And I'd love to get to the bottom of this because we used to have our kit was made by Influence when I started going, who I think did it from 89, 90 onwards. And I think Portsmouth had Influence as well for a period. And their logo was luminescent yellow. And it's not a million miles away. Do you remember there was a while where Nike were really pushing Volt, that color that they decided to
Yeah.
invent? And it was on everything, it was on the Spurs shirt. Influence tried to do that with a little bit less success because I think they went bust. But that was sort of, the trim of the shirt basically was this luminous color, but we stuck with it even when we ditched Influence. We had a year of Brooks, who make running trainers predominantly, I think still exist in America. And then it went in-house and we put a Rangers Clubhouse logo on it, but it seemed to be identical just with a different sponsor. But still that yellow piping remained. But again, Classic FM, what a quaint, lovely sponsor.
Yeah.
But if you look at those shirts in action, if you type in Les Ferdinand 1993, they look like rugby shirts. Like they're so billowy and the collar's weird. You've got to say the Guinness shirts for QPR are the ones that are very hard to beat.
I had a QPR shirt as a kid. They must have been on a sail rail somewhere, but I had the, was it Viewpoint with Compact as the sponsor and
Viewfront?
long sleeve? Yeah, it was, it must, might be, yeah, and it was long sleeve as well, which, as a, well, that'd been what, 95-ish, wouldn't it? Maybe,
Yeah,
give or take.
you're serving Ray Wilkins.
There we go. Well, I wish I still had that as a nod to Ray Wilkins, because that would be a great shirt to have, but
That was the shirt we got relegated in, that View From shirt. But we kept it for the following season. But Compaq took one look at the Endersley Division One and didn't fancy that. So we brought in Ericsson as our sponsor. And it is this monstrous felt patch that just went over all the shirts, the Compaq on all of them. And like you looked at it in the club shop and just like looked at the inside of it. And there was the Compaq still very visible. It was an incredibly cheap job.
that's probably why it ended up at Pocket Money Price in Don Rogers Sports in Swindon, which enabled me to pick it up. But I'm not going to complain. What about you, Adam? Any QPR shirts over the years? No, I've never owned a QPR shirt. No, it's not. And very similar to what you said earlier, Tom, it's only Liverpool and Norwich shirts that I have, having lived here for so long. They are kind of my second team. I wouldn't wear anyone else, but I do really like some of the QPR shirts. It's interesting you say they haven't really changed that much in that sense of like Crystal Palace. It's that difficult kind of thing, isn't it? That you want to keep on hold of that identity, and when you have hoops, it's difficult to mix it up a bit too much, as opposed to Crystal Palace, who seemingly are happy to go from, like, they had a diagonal stripe one the other year that I really, really liked. And yeah, like you said, sometimes it's just more plain red, more plain blue stripes, but they've had all sorts of things. But I like the fact that QPR keep it, like, it's recognizable. I do also agree that I think going forward, every single shirt should have the hoops outlined in red. I think it just looks better. It just suits it more. The classic kind of the Guinness one, but now the new Araya shirt as well. That's
Yeah.
QPR to me, but I think probably because I'm a similar age to you, that's what I remember kind of growing up. I vaguely remember the Guinness days, and that's in my mind, that is what a QPR kit is.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the hoops as the identity. When we sorted out our emblem after the awful years where it looked like Flavio Briatore's hair, they were quite big on the branding of the hoops, and we had a few years where the hoops were consistent. We had hoops on all of our away kits, which I thought was really nice, but again, probably just not sustainable. You run out of options quite quickly. I do just think if you're changing it every year, you could play a few shots one year, but yeah, I think our fans would be absolutely livid. We've seen this week with the England shirts that a playful twist on beloved markers of identity does not always go down that well.
Yeah, I'm sure in around the Shepherd's Bush, if QPR messed with the stripes the way, or hoops the way that Inter Milan have messed with the stripes the last few years, there'd be outrage.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So I guess just circling down before we wrap up, we're going to ask you a couple of questions. Mike might have tipped you off in terms of the question we always ask at the end, which is a dream player, dream kit combo. We will ask you that, but just to catch you out a little bit here, I want to go back to that 1992 photograph. And you can't answer QPR, but if you could take any player from that era and have had them turn up to the photo shoot in their team's kit, who would you have gone for? Who would have been the dream in that dream lineup for you?
You don't want me to do all 22 players, do you? I mean,
Absolutely not. So we can take
that.
Ferdinand and QPR as a given, but go on, you can go with one or two others if you think who would you have liked to have seen in that lineup?
Yeah, I think Sharp is a slightly unfortunate timing with Sharp, because of what we know, how we know how it played out. But I mean, Giggs is probably the pick for Man United, isn't he? He was just a thrilling presence and a really interesting looking bloke at that point, in his life. Who else would you have? You'd probably have Matt Le Tissier above Tim Flowers, wouldn't you? I mean, quite aside from what Matt Le Tissier is talking about these days, I just remember such excitement from him, in those early years of the Premier League. Yeah, I should get the photo up really and have a think about it. But
But Arsenal, who'd you gone with Arsenal?
oh, it's got to be right, hasn't it?
Yeah, I
He,
think so.
it's not. Yeah, it's got to be right, I think. Again, just an electric player for a period. Although I think that was a bit of a struggle for him that season, as it was Arsenal. So yeah, maybe had he gone to the photo shoot in place of David Hillier, he would have had a better time of it.
And who would you like to see for Liverpool, Adam? Would you sent Mark Wright?
No, I'd have sent my hero Ian Rush. It would have been Rushy. He was my hero growing up, and yeah, Mark Wright is fine. And as someone who used to play in defence, I can appreciate his craft, but no, would have been Rushy, 100%.
Yeah, I think you've got some strong individuals in there, and people should go and check out the article because it is really interesting. Tom, remind everybody what they can Google to find your article.
Try 92-93 Premier League launch and then my name, which is Tom with an H, Gibbs.
Telegraph.
Telegraph.
We've got to get that in there for you as well.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
So then coming back to the final question then, which we always ask, it's the fantasy question. You can have any player from any point in time with any shirt from any point in time. Don't have to play for the club or country. What would your dream combination be?
Well, this is one that came tantalizingly close to actually happening, but didn't happen. But allegedly, it was a thing that briefly was on the cards, if you believe everything you read on teletext, which you absolutely should. And it's Roberto Baggio and QPR 95-96. And I realize we've spent the vast majority of the time talking about QPR and the 90s, but we're men of a certain age. But I've had him in the away shirt. So we spoke about the view from home shirt. The away shirt has aged really well. It's navy with white pinstripes. We didn't wear it all that much, but it looks really, really smart. Almost doesn't look quite like a football shirt and has the memories of relegation associated with it. So I don't think has gone down as a classic. But it's a really, really smart shirt. And we'd sold Les Ferdinand that summer, and we allegedly thought about replacing him with Roberto Baggio. And it was reported, it got as far as the Evening Standard. And, so just in case you weren't convinced by teletext, it must have had some semblance of truth to it, saying that it could have just been an agent making mischief. But of course, he didn't arrive, which deprived us of a fantastic strike force of Kevin Gallen, Danny Diccio and Roberto Baggio. We ended up with Mark Hately instead, which didn't go
I can't believe I did not know this. Would this have
well.
been at the end of his Milan stint then, would it? When he
I
went on
suppose so,
to
yeah.
Bologna, or that's that
Yeah.
sort of time.
The Standard report, which I looked up, said that we were partially motivated because we'd been in for Ruud Gullit and were really annoyed we'd lost out to Chelsea, which again just seems like, I don't know. I don't know if Ruud Gullit brought out the tunnel at Loftus Road and thought, hang on.
Going to ask you another question though, because you've just touched on something. So a couple of weeks ago, I did a quiz. And we had a quiz on the pod, and I got told some of the questions I asked were too difficult. Now, one of the questions I asked was, what was the page number for the sports news on Teletext? And also, what was the gossip channel for transferred gossip? Can you
I
remember
don't.
either of those?
I
Wasn't it
wouldn't have gone.
CFAX you asked?
Oh, did I ask CFAX? The
I think you
BBC
said
one?
C. Yeah, the BBC
Okay,
CFAX.
CFAX. I meant CFAX.
I wouldn't have gone in for gossip. I'm much too grown up for that. But all I remember is 301 for football.
Yeah, I think it was 3-1, and 3-2-4 was like the Premier League table, which topical. I
Yeah.
think, or was it 3-1-4?
According to your quiz, question. It was 3-2-4, which I did well, not get, but I remembered 3-0-1 and 3-0-2. But yes,
well,
see,
you can't
even remember your own quiz question.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not go over those answers and open up our wins. It's only just settled down.
You've certainly reached the stage in your life, haven't you, where you're getting nostalgic about 3-digit number codes for things. Imagine trying to explain this to a child.
They just wouldn't get it.
They'd be saying, all right, granddad, that's enough. Yeah, you typed in on your remote and it came up on the big screen. Yeah, yeah.
I literally used to say to me and my mates, you say we were surfing the text whenever we used to check the Premier League scores on a Saturday. But it's the only way we could do it. Like, you could also do it where you were watching TV and it would come up at the bottom, like a picture-in-picture
thing. You could have the score coming up. Yes.
That's what we used to do. That's what we used to do. Men of a certain age, this is what we had to deal with. The kids today, they don't know what it's all about.
No, quite. And thank goodness they don't, because it was rubbish.
It really was. It was dreadful.
But it's been fun talking about it. Tom, your article is brilliant. So everybody should go and check that out. It is one of the most iconic photographs and TV adverts in Premier League history, really. Obviously, it's where it all started. So to all of our listeners, go and check that out. Also, Tom, you're on Instagram, are you?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, Tom Gives With an H. I've also been ranking the Premier League and men's international tournament shirts for the Telegraph every year since, I'm going to say, 2014. So that's always a big day for me. It's kit Christmas when the Euros kits come out this year. So check back and look at my definitive rankings of the shirts, which it really winds me up how some other outlets do their rankings of the shirts, because they go when the shirts aren't even finalised yet. They say all the shirts rank. I saw one before the playoffs had even finished. How can it be all the shirts, lads? It's not acceptable.
We are with you on this. We are absolutely with you on that. Take your time.
Also,
don't base it on leaks. Base it on reality when they're all out.
Exactly. And be consistent in the pictures, because otherwise it's not fair. And also, ranked and rated, like, they're different things. Those words do not belong together. Unless you're saying, this is the fourth best shirt and I'm giving it 8 out of 10. That it's not ranked and rated. End that now, please.
You can come back. You can come back. No spoiler alerts then. You don't have to give us your number one rated and ranked shirt. But what are a couple of your favourites then that we're going to see this summer?
You know what? This is pathetic. But this is one of the jobs I do for my work that I take the most seriously. And I genuinely try not to look at too many and try and keep the process as pure as I can. So I'm coming to it fresh. So the only ones I've really looked at in any detail are England. I try to, you know, when you like realize halfway through you're on a web page or you're reading an article and it's got a spoiler in it and you just try and gloss over and scroll through it. I try and do that with the kits until I sit down and actually start the rankings. But I love the England shirts. I think the home is slightly let down by the numbers, and I really, really loved the Euro the shirts with that sort of funky red number. I've got a Sterling one of those actually, which I think I ordered it last year, and it came with Sterling, I believe his number was 7 on the back, and I was genuinely quite crestfallen that it didn't have the 7 on the front. So I contacted a bloke who does like shirt numbering basically, and he found the right fonts and put the little 7 on the front for me. I'm 40 years old, but it made me very happy.
Got your QPR link as well. And we're with you. The numbers on this England shirt would have been better in red.
Yeah, it just doesn't quite pop, does it? And that's the thing about looking at the launch photos. You've sort of got to see them in games, I think. Otherwise, it's all academic, really, because they can look so different. The things that look amazing in photo shoots just don't really work in person, and sometimes the other way around.
We saw Sodden away shirt a couple of days ago, didn't we, at Wembley? But Adam, that's a grower, isn't that away shirt? It was mixed, got received mixed to start with, but I think people are really going for it now.
The England one, I think it's great. I think it's a bold colour choice, and I like that. I think it almost should be kind of every year or every kit release, it should be a traditional one. And then the following one, whether it's a home or away, should be something a little bit more out there. And this is certainly a bit more out there with the colour and the panelling down the side. I think it's a really smart shirt. And I like what they've done to the cross on both the home and away shirts. But, you know, we might have to cut that bit out in case people get really angry about it again and call us woke.
Yeah, we get cancelled in Burnley. Tom, let us know when that goes live, when you start to drop some of those, and we'll share them, because we're really interested in seeing your thoughts on those kits when they're published.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I love that.
I hope you enjoyed that. We really, really did. So much so that we forgot to record the intro and outro properly. My fault. But one important message to leave you with before we go this week. Check out Granny's Football Store, our sponsor. The website is now back up live. And I'll tell you what, on the 1st of April at 1 p.m, he has got an incredible launch of shirts coming up. 1 p.m, 1st of April. Go and check it out. In the meantime, they think it's all over. It is now.